Hello, I'm your Iris reader Dale Finnegan, and it's time for today's obituaries from the Des Moines Register. From Ankeny, Janice Juliana Walker, known as Jan, age 83, passed away Monday, July 27th, peacefully at Mill Pond. An outdoor funeral service will be held Friday, July 31st at Ankeny Memorial Gardens, 4208 North Ankeny Boulevard. A visitation will be held from 2 to 4 Friday, July 31st at Memorial Services of Iowa. For the full obituary, please visit www.memorialservicesofiowa.com. Dennis R. Fulton, age 74, of Waukee, passed away on Sunday night, July 26th, at the Kavanaugh Hospice House on 56th Street with his loving family at his side. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 31st at the New Hope Christian Church in Marshalltown, with Pastor Carrie Jack officiating. He will be laid to rest in the Benson Cemetery at Whitton, with graveside rites conducted by Reverend Ralph Norman of Liscombe Church of Christ. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at the Mitchell Family Funeral Home in Marshalltown, with a 7 p.m. Masonic service. A memorial fund is being established. For condolences, please visit www.mitchellfh.com, or the phone number is 641-844-1234. Born Dennis Richard Fulton on October 2, 1945, in Muscatine, he was the son of Richard C. and Marjorie Paul Fulton. He grew up in Wilton Junction, Iowa. His uncle, Harry, who owned the funeral home in Wilton, sparked something in Dennis to follow suit. Dennis marked 52 years in funeral service this year after serving countless families at Estill Perrins in Marshalltown, Dunn's Funeral Home in Des Moines, Turner Funeral Home and Cedar Memorial in Cedar Rapids, and the Greer Funeral Home in Waterloo. He and Connie also started Code Mide Associates, an asset and recovery firm. His family later moved to Whitton, and he graduated from the Union Whitton High School in 1963. He returned to his former area, graduating from the Muscatine Community College in 1965 after lettering in basketball and baseball. In 1967, he graduated from the University of Minnesota with a degree in mortuary science. On October 27, 1968, he was united in marriage to the love of his life, Connie Jo Morris. They made their home in many communities where he was active in church, the Masonic and Shrine, and the lives of his children. He held offices in the Cedar Rapids Washington High Athletic Club and the Marian Christian Church, the Des Moines JCs, El Cahir Shrine, and was the youngest Reagan delegate at the Republican National Convention in 1980 in Detroit. Left to cherish his memory is Connie, his loving wife of nearly 52 years, daughter Michelle Koiker, and spouse Aaron of Fairfield, son Derek R. Fulton of Waukee, two granddaughters, Ashton and Landon Koiker, his siblings Steve Fulton of Whitton, Sonia Moore and spouse Mike of Conrad, Peg Clemens, spouse Barry of Union, Don Fulton, spouse Dory of Windsor Heights, many nieces and nephews that he treasured, and his aunt Janice Burkhofer of Moscow, Iowa. In death, Dennis rejoined his parents and grandparents. Thomas F. Greenwood, who went by Tom, age 83, passed away peacefully at his home on July 25th, surrounded by the love and comfort of his family. He was born in Des Moines on December 23, 1936, to Earl and Mary Caputo Greenwood. Tom proudly served in the United States Army. He worked for La Pizza House from its time of opening in 1953 through the early 1970s. Tom retired as an iron worker with Union 67 after many years of service, but didn't let that slow him down. He loved working part-time at the Civic Center and Wells Fargo Arena, as well as volunteering at the Iowa State Fair. Tom was a member of Calvary Baptist Church prior to becoming a member of First Baptist Church in Johnston. Tom was a devoted husband, father, and grandfather who cherished time spent with his family. He loved attending his daughters and grandchildren's numerous activities throughout the years, never missing an event. Tom especially enjoyed spending time with his daughters building and racing soapbox derby cars. Tom had many interests, some of which included gardening, fishing, riding his bicycle, and tinkering in his garage, building and fixing things. He also looked forward to attending high school sporting events long after his daughters and grandchildren graduated. Tom is survived by his loving wife of 58 years, Norma, daughters Mary Johnson, spouse Jim, Nancy Teague, spouse Dave, and Cindy King, spouse Bill. Grandchildren, Sydney Johnson, spouse Luke Goode, Grant Johnson, and Jack Teague, as well as a host of other loving family and many special friends. He was preceded in death by his parents, Earl and Mary Greenwood, brothers Kenneth Greenwood and Ramon Greenwood. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, August 1st at First Baptist Church, 8250 Northwest 62nd Avenue, Johnston, with burials will follow at Highland Memory Garden Cemetery. The family requests masks be worn and social distancing is encouraged. If guests are not able to attend the service in person, they are invited to watch Tom's service virtually through the link in his obituary on Hamilton's website. In loving memory of Tom, memorial contributions may be directed to the Iowa State Fair Blue Ribbon Foundation. Condolences may be expressed at www.hamiltonsfuneralhome.com. Amy Ferwerda passed away at her home in West Des Moines on July 26th. She graduated high school in Spencer and had an associate's degree from Mankato State University. Amy loved spending time with family and friends at the beaches in Florida, gardening, and reading. Memorial services will be private for family members only. Amy is survived by her sister, Julie Ferwerda, from The Villages in Florida, and Annette Ferwerda from Cocoa Beach, Florida. Barbara Bree Schoen, age 95, of Altoona, passed away on Monday, July 27th at Parkridge Specialty Care Center in Pleasant Hill. A remembrance of her life and mass will be held on Friday, July 31st at Merle Hay Funeral Home at Chapel Hill Gardens, 4400 Merle Hay Road in Des Moines, with visitation beginning at 10 a.m. and a funeral mass at 11 a.m., with interment in the adjoining Chapel Hill Gardens. Memorials can be made to Parkridge Specialty Care, 5800 Northeast 12th Avenue, Pleasant Hill, Iowa, 50327. Willard Maynard Hinderaker, known as Bill, was born December 16, 1925, on the Hinderaker Century Farm near Radcliffe. Bill and his wife, Anna Jane Bjorkstrand, were married for 70 years, raised their family on the farm, and loved their time there until the couple retired and moved to town. Bill and Anna Jane's family includes 5 children, 13 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren. Details are available at www.boekfuneralhomes.com. That's B-O-E-K-E, funeralhomes.com. Bill passed away on Tuesday, July 28th, having lived a long, meaningful life filled with loving memories. Visitation on Friday, July 31st from 5 to 7 p.m., funeral service on Saturday, August 1st at 10:30 a.m., both at Our Savior Lutheran Church in Radcliffe. Interment at Radcliffe Cemetery immediately following the funeral. Friends and family are welcome and also invited to a socially distanced, individually packaged lunch following services on Saturday. CDC guidelines are encouraged for the safety of all. Blessed be the life and memory of Willard Maynard Hinderaker. Lieutenant Colonel retired Michael John Musil, age 74, of Urbandale, passed away Sunday, April 12th at Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines. A celebration of life will be held on August 15th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Recreation Hall, Building B57/3585 at Camp Dodge in Johnston. Masks will be required and social distancing regulations will be followed. Michael was born October 22, 1945, to Bernard and Arlene Rebick Musil in Belle Plaine. He graduated from Belle Plaine High School in 1963 and attended Iowa State University. He served in the U.S. Army and Iowa Army National Guard with over 25 years of service. He retired from the USDA in 2005 and was a historian at the Iowa Gold Star Military Museum until his passing. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests a donation made in his name to the Iowa Gold Star Military Museum, 7105 Northwest 70th Avenue, Johnston, Iowa, 50131. Online condolences can be sent to the family at www.newhousefuneralservice.com. Serena S. Helton, age 89, of Des Moines, passed away on July 27th at Unity Point Iowa Methodist Medical Center. Her family will honor her with a private funeral service. Serena Sophia Dirksen, the daughter of Reinhard and Adele, maiden name Heesch Dirksen, was born July 15, 1931, in Kanawha. After moving to Des Moines, she worked at Look magazine and then began an over 40-year career with Burger King. Serena enjoyed gardening and feeding and watching the birds. She liked to begin her day drinking coffee and reading the newspaper. She was a member of Grace Lutheran Church for more than 57 years. Serena is lovingly remembered by her daughters, Debbie Curry, spouse Wayne, and Lori Helton. Grandchildren, Sharina Appenzeller, spouse Josh, and Josh Curry. Great-grandchildren, Kylan Appenzeller, Dawson Curry, and Zayden Appenzeller. And her brother, Mervyn Dirksen. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Lynn Eugene Helton, and brother, Ray Dirksen. Memorial contributions may be given to the ARL Iowa or Grace Lutheran Church. James Blaine Pike Jr., also known as Big Jim or Grandpa to many, age 94, died peacefully in his home of 68 years on January 25th of natural causes. Jim was born March 9th, 1926 in Pequaming, Michigan to James Blaine Pike Sr. and Ruth Lucille Spriggs Pike. He grew up on the south side of Des Moines and spent his adult life on the east side of Des Moines. Jim was a proud 1944 graduate of East High School. He served in the United States Navy in World War II and the Korean War. He worked in trucking all his working years, making a good living for his family. He was loved deeply by so many folk, with many stating that they had never known a finer man. He will leave a hole in many hearts. Jim was preceded in death by his beloved bride of 68 years, Mary Jane Thomas Pike, who passed away August 29, 2014. Survivors include four children, Nancy Elliott, spouse Rick, Sally Henson, spouse Terry, James Pike III, spouse Sherry, all of Pleasant Hill, and John Pike of Des Moines. Six grandchildren, Jay Elliott, spouse Paula, Lindsay Peterson, spouse Kevin, Mindy Havener, spouse Josh, Adam Hart, spouse Karen, Caleb Pike, spouse Nicole, and Judah Pike, and 13 great-grandchildren, JC, Rhett, Brody, Mason, Riley, Reagan, Jake, Logan, Ethan, Cadence, Maisie, Lily, and London. The family would like to extend special thanks to our East 36th Street family for their loving friendship and support. A graveside service is being planned. Also, due to COVID-19, a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Red Cross or the Salvation Army. Sandra Jo Adams, known as Sandy, age 84, passed away on July 27th at the Gardens at Luther Park. She was born June 11th, 1936, to Harold and Edith Peterson. Born and raised in Des Moines, Sandy was a proud East High alumni, graduating with the class of 1954. She retired after dedicating 43 years to her career with the Department of Natural Resources, where she served as the first female bureau chief. Sandy was an active member of Union Park United Methodist Church and the Red Hat Society. In retirement, she enjoyed traveling, quilting, and spending time with her family and loved ones, including her fellow East High graduates and retired state employees group. Sandy volunteered countless hours to Hope Ministries and was a universal blood donor, donating 103 times for a total of 12 gallons to those in need. Sandy is survived by her son, Michael Adams, spouse Colleen, stepsons, Douglas Adams, spouse Diane, and Wendell Piper, spouse Sally, grandchildren, Kevin Adams and Emily Adams, step-grandchildren, Michelle Fraun, spouse Adam, Matthew Adams, spouse Caitlin, Michael Adams, spouse Denny, Heidi Evans, spouse Kevin, Bambi Piper, Amy Leaners, and Megan Leaners, 9 step-great-grandchildren, as well as a host of other loving family and many special friends. She was preceded in death by her husband, Wayne Adams, her parents, Harold and Edith, and her aunt, Barbara Guthrie. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday, August 2nd at Hamilton's near Highland Memory Gardens, 121 Northwest 60th Avenue in Des Moines. Funeral services will begin at noon on Monday, August 3rd, also at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to Union Park United Methodist Church, Hope Ministries, or the Animal Rescue League. Online condolences may be expressed at www.hamiltonsfuneralhome.com. Charlene June McQuiston passed away on July 27th at Unity Point Hospital in Bettendorf. Her daughter, Teresa, was by her side at her time of passing. Charlene was preceded in death by her husband, Larry J. McQuiston, her son, Rick Johannick, and her parents, Charles Cole and Iva June Cole. She is survived by Teresa Griffiths, spouse Jim, Joseph Wright, Lori Gibbons, and Ryan Wright, spouse Meredith. Charlene was a loving mother and grandmother. Her life was not always easy, but she always made sure her family was taken care of. She retired from the Polk County Courthouse in 1992. She was a resident of the south side of Des Moines for most of her life. Charlene was struck with MS that left her in a wheelchair. This did not stop her from going anywhere she wanted to go. Charlene loved to play bingo in addition to going to the casino to play the slot machines. She loved playing board games with her family. She loved going to her daughter and son-in-law's house in Rock Island to grill out and sit on the deck. Charlene was her daughter TJ's best friend. They did a lot of things together. Her favorite place to eat was Red Lobster. She loved being with her grandson, Ryan, and his wife, Meredith. Charlene will be truly missed by her family and friends. Memorial services will be held on Friday, July 31st. Visitation will take place at Isles Funeral Home's Grandview Park, 3211 Hubble Avenue in Des Moines, from 9:30 to 10:30. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Burial at Glendale Cemetery, 4909 University Avenue in Des Moines, to follow immediately. Charlene has requested, in lieu of flower arrangements, please make donations in her honor to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, www.nationalmssociety.org. Wilda Marie Stillwell of Des Moines, age 93, passed away Friday, July 24th. Wilda was born March 11, 1927, to Floyd and Hazel Jones in Lovelia, Iowa. She graduated from Lovelia High School and later completed a college teaching curriculum. Wilda worked as a teacher in a one-room school for several years. After marrying Dale, she was primarily a homemaker while also working as a clerk for Look magazine and as a sales associate for Sears. In retirement, Wilda and Dale split their time between Des Moines and Apache Junction, Arizona. She loved to cook, travel, camp, and spend time with her family. She was an avid animal lover. Wilda is survived by her children, Bob Stillwell, spouse Katie, Dan Stillwell, spouse Jill, and Lynette Stillwell. Grandchildren, Holly Dengle, spouse Romeo, Marie Stillwell, and Radu Dengle, spouse Claudia. Sister-in-law, Barbara Stillwell, and many extended family members and friends. She was preceded in death by her husband, Dale, her parents, and her brother, Wilbur Jones, spouse Bobby. Visitation will be held at 9 a.m. Friday, July 31st, with funeral services following at 11 a.m. at Hamilton's Funeral Home, 605 Lyon Street in Des Moines. Graveside service to follow at 1:30 p.m. at Hamilton Cemetery in Hamilton, Iowa. The family respectfully requests social distancing and the wearing of masks. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be directed to Emmanuel United Methodist Church. Condolences may be expressed at www.hamiltonsfuneralhome.com. That concludes the obituaries for today. Turning now to the sports section, we will cover the state baseball and softball tournaments with this article from the top of the page. Winterset outlasts DCG in semis. Dateline is Fort Dodge, Iowa. The author, Matthew Bain. In a thrilling pitcher's duel, Winterset outlasted Dallas Center Grimes 2-1 Wednesday in a battle of Central Iowa teams in the Class 4A state softball semifinals. The 7th-seeded Huskies advanced to play top-seeded Carlisle with a 20-3 record at 7:30 p.m. Thursday in the championship game. Winterset's Thea Banning tossed all 7 innings with the one run allowed on 6 hits and a walk. She also struck out 4 DCG batters. For DCG, with a 20-10 record, Lainey Gannon also pitched a complete game, allowing 2 runs, 1 earned, on 6 hits and 6 walks. She also struck out 3 Huskies. Natalie Drake and Bridget Stover each drove in Winterset's 2 runs, while Riley Feely knocked in DCG's lone run. Drake doubled home Riley Cuse to take the 2-1 lead in the top of the 4th inning. Stover kicked off the scoring in the top of the 1st by doubling on Jenna Young, who led off by reaching base on an error. Thea Banning also hit a double for Winterset with a 16-7 record. This game could have actually been much higher scoring as both teams stranded plenty of runners on base. Winterset stranded 11 and DCG left 8. Carlisle tops North Scott 8-3. Fueled by a 7-run 4th inning, top-seeded Carlisle handled number 4 North Scott 8-3 Wednesday in the Class 4A state softball semifinals to advance to Thursday's title game. There, the Wildcats, with a 20-3 record, will play fellow Central Iowa school Winterset with a 23-4 record. The Lancers, 17-10, scored all 3 of their runs in the top of the 1st with RBIs from Sam Lee, Sydney Skerrick, and a wild pitch. That's all Carlisle pitcher Molly Hoekstra allowed, with 3 scoreless frames after that 1st inning. Lexi Link then shut out the Lancers in her 3 innings of work. Carlisle cut the deficit to 3-1 with a run in the bottom of the 1st. Then, in the bottom of the 4th, Kaylin Fernal smacked a 2-run home run to tie the game 3-3. Aubrey Fernal hit a 2-run RBI single with the bases loaded to put the Wildcats up 5-3. And Meredith Hoffman finished the scoring onslaught with a 3-run homer to give Carlisle its final 8-3 lead. Aubrey Fernal went 4-for-4 with 2 RBIs and 2 runs scored. For North Scott, Lee went 3-for-3 with the 1st inning RBI. Ryan Cheek and Drew Lewis combined to pitch 6 innings for the Lancers, allowing 8 runs, 5 of them earned, on 8 hits and 3 walks while striking out 4. And below that, Cody Goodwin will tell us about the baseball with Urbandale outduels Waukee in Class 4A. Since Rick Heller took over the Iowa baseball program, he's made it a point to recruit the state's best players. As a result, many top Iowa high school pitchers have found homes on the Hawkeyes roster. Two more plan to head to Iowa City this fall as part of Heller's 2020 recruiting class. Urbandale's Ty Langenberg and Waukee's Jackson Payne. Both are among the nation's top up-and-coming pitching prospects, according to Perfect Game. The two righties put their talents on display in a pitcher's duel Wednesday in the Class 4A state quarterfinals at Principal Park. Langenberg's Jayhawks had the last laugh, winning 2-0 to advance to Friday's semifinal. "Many times I said, whoever scores the first run could win this game," Urbandale coach Jeremy Heinen said. "I'm glad we got past Waukee. To face them and get by them is a huge testament to our team." Both pitchers produced outstanding performances. Langenberg allowed 5 hits, issued 5 walks, and struck out 6 over 6 1/3 innings. Drew Dykstra relieved him to record the final 2 outs after Langenberg hit his pitch count limit in the final inning. Payne was just as dominant, allowing 3 hits and 2 runs and striking out 7 over 6 complete innings. Both runs that came in the bottom of the third held up for the Jayhawks with an 18-9 record, who kept alive their hopes of a third straight state title. Reese Heinen drew a 1-out walk, then reached second when Dykstra singled to left. Both advanced to scoring position on a wild pitch. Gehrig Christensen singled to left to bring Heinen home for a 1-0 lead and put Dykstra up on third. Up came Paul Frank, who sacrificed fly to right, put Urbandale up 2-0. "I got my pitch to hit, and I drove it to left field," Christensen said. "I always think Ty's going to give his best and give up no runs, so I thought that was going to be good enough." That was all the Jayhawks needed on this day, though Waukee, with a 14-13 record, had plenty of scoring opportunities. The Warriors put runners in scoring position during each of the first 4 innings, even loading the bases in the fourth, but failed to capitalize. In the first, Jacob Barton reached second with 2 outs, but Langenberg promptly struck out Aiden McGee. In the second, Colin Evers was on third with 2 outs, but Langenberg K'd Matthew Jongarius. In the third, Barton again stood on second with 2 outs, but Alex Walsh grounded out to first. "The intensity was off the charts," Langenberg said. "I just focused on the batter at the plate. I can't worry too much about the guys on base because then I'll take my mind off the batter and then I won't throw strikes. I have to stand up there and throw strikes." "There was a lot of pressure and the intensity was high, but I was able to go out there and get it done." In the fourth, Evers again reached second, this time with 1 out. Langenberg walked Cooper Krause, popped up Jungarius, then walked Jalen Martinez to load the bases. He took a breath and then struck out Barton looking. Tommy Birch has more about the baseball tournament at the bottom of the page with this article, "Johnston Hitters' Extra Work Paying Off at State." Instead of waiting around and wondering if the high school baseball season was going to take place during the COVID-19 crisis, Johnston baseball coach Michael Barta urged his players to keep in contact with him and his staff in a unique way. Barta told his players if they were going to get some work done, record it and send it to the staff. So, as Barta sat in his Johnston home, he watched videos of his guys taking hacks in their garage, taking swings in the front lawn, and even taking turns going out to a local little league field to take some batting practice. As Barta watched all of the videos, he realized that if there was going to be a season in 2020, his Dragons were going to be ready to hit. "They got after it, and they did it on their own, and when we were able to come together, I felt like maybe we were a step ahead of a lot of programs," Barta said. Johnston's high-powered offense, one of the best in the state, was on full display Wednesday afternoon. The top-seeded Dragons scored in all six innings they came to the plate and hit their way to another victory with an 11-7 win over number 8 Cedar Falls in the quarterfinals of the Class 4A State Baseball Tournament at Principal Park. "Our mentality is, if you score 5 runs, we will win the game," said Johnston's Ben Wilms. That's typically been the case for the Dragons, who improved to 22-3 on the season with the victory and advanced to Friday's semifinals. The biggest reason? The offense. The Dragons entered the tournament with the top offense in Class 4A, scoring 240 runs and tallying a .363 batting average as a team. Parker Shoup did most of the damage with a .460 average. Barta said he isn't surprised because his team stayed sharp during quarantine even when they weren't together. Gabe Swanson hit balls in his garage. Jacob Wolver took swings in his yard. Most of the Dragons took turns venturing out to the Johnston Little League field to take some batting practice. Some of them enlisted the help of their dads to throw to them. "I think it was pretty important to us to have the bats ready," Wilms said. "They have been. They were on full display Wednesday." Wilms went 3-for-3 with 2 runs scored and 2 runs batted in. Wolver went 2-for-3. The hot hitting helped Johnston build up a 6-0 lead in the third inning. When Cedar Falls made a run, cutting the lead to 7-6 in the fifth inning, Johnston's offense answered back with a 3-run fifth. "Our offense has been great this year," Swanson said. "It really helps our team, especially when the other team scores." Connor Woods went 3-for-4, including a bases-loaded, bases-clearing double in the fourth inning. Brody Bartlett and Caleb Brasty both added 2 hits. Cedar Falls played only 9 games this season due to the COVID-19 crisis. The Tigers lost 2 weeks of their season after a player tested positive for coronavirus. It didn't ruin their entire season, though. Cedar Falls was still able to reach the state tournament for the 2nd time in school history and 1st time since 1989. "Our guys, they competed, and they battled, and it was a lot of fun," said Cedar Falls coach Brett Williams. There is a note to readers here that Ankeny and Pleasant Valley were scheduled to play in a state baseball tournament quarterfinal Wednesday, but it was after the Register went to press. There are 2 more articles on the state tournaments, but I'm going to slide over now to the date book and read the material there. If we have time, I'll come back and update you on the rest of the high school games. There is one big article in the datebook session titled 5 Fun Summer Things to Do Without Leaving Iowa, and it is written by Paula Reese. If canceled cruises or the travel ban to Europe has you down this summer, don't overlook the fun you can have close to home. You may not feel safe venturing across the country, but we've come up with 5 different COVID-friendly trips across the state that can get you out of the house and exploring Iowa. Clear Lake. For that resort town feeling in Iowa, visit Clear Lake, where the beaches are open for swimming and the lakes offer many recreational activities, from fishing to boating and watercraft rental. Choose from 3 different public beach access points, one of which includes a just-opened splash pad, or stay as a guest at a resort or other accommodation that offers private beach access. Explore history by visiting the crash site of The Day the Music Died, where a stainless steel guitar and set of 3 stainless steel records mark the spot where the plane carrying Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P., the Big Bopper, Richardson, crashed following their final performance at the Surf Ballroom. You'll also want to check out the Clear Lake Fire Museum, built by members of the Clear Lake Volunteer Fire Department to represent an early 1900s fire station. Sit atop an antique fire truck and learn about the history of firefighting. Don't miss the 9/11 Memorial, which includes a salvaged steel beam from the World Trade Center. Learn more about things to do at clearlakeiowa.com. After a day of playing in the sun or exploring history, cool off with a cold one from Lake Time Brewery, featuring socially distanced indoor and outdoor seating and locally favorite beers like the Iowa Nice Light Lager or the On the Rocks Margarita Ale. Just a half hour north in Lake Mills is Five Alarm Brewing Company, a brewery owned and operated by local volunteer firefighters. With plenty of room to spread out and huge tables, along with games like shuffleboard, bags, and ping pong in the basement, you don't have to worry about feeling crowded. Check out the map with patches from firefighters from across the state and beyond, as well as the fire equipment and photos. And try a flight of beers to choose your favorite, including the most popular, Blueberry Wheat, which you can grab in a six-pack to go. Decora. Love to bike? Take a road trip to Decora to try out the newly finished Trout Run Trail following the Upper Iowa River. The last piece of the 11-mile loop was the bridge over Highway 9, which is outfitted with special LED lighting that will change colors throughout the year. The trail crosses trout streams five times and runs next to the Decora Trout Hatchery, the second largest trout hatchery in Iowa. Make a stop at the DNR Trout Hatchery at Slewers Springs and let the kids feed the fish for just a quarter. Don't forget to look up while on the trail to see the famous Decora Eagle's Nest with its live cam at raptureresource.org. Continue the outdoor fun by taking a short trip to Dunning Springs Park to see the 200-foot waterfall just a few minutes from downtown Decora. The waterfall is accessible to persons with disabilities and includes an area for picnicking as well as trails. The park is located on Ice Cave Road. For a luxurious stay, book a room at the Hotel Winnesheek, a historic boutique hotel over a century old in the heart of downtown Decora. Enjoy 21st century comfort with 19th century charm in one of 34 rooms and suites. On-site dining and bar options make it a truly full-service hotel with walking access to shops and other downtown attractions. Extra precautions are being taken to provide the ultimate safety for guests, including reduction of high-touch items in rooms and an advanced electrostatic disinfecting process. Dubuque. Dubuque has much to offer for couples and families. The National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium brings the history of the Mississippi River to life with indoor and outdoor exhibits and experiences. Now through September 7th, the Robot Zoo is included with admission, featuring 8 robotic animals and more than a dozen hands-on activities that illustrate animal characteristics, from how a chameleon changes colors to how a giant squid propels itself. The 4D movie theater is open with an additional ticket required. Becky Jones Webb and her daughter, Nova, from Osceola, recently visited the museum and aquarium and reported feeling very safe. Staff wore masks and almost everyone visiting wore them too, said Jones Webb. The museum created paths to keep the light traffic away from one another. Daily creature features, animal touch experiences, and public animal feedings have been suspended for the safety of the animals, and Riverworks splash zone boats have been removed from the water for the safety of patrons. Enjoy the beauty of Dubuque by exploring the Mines of Spain, where you can hike several scenic trails, including the iconic Horseshoe Bluff Nature Trail that overlooks the Mississippi River. Don't miss the paved ADA walkway, where you can see trees from all 50 states. And a trip to the Mines of Spain wouldn't be complete without a visit to one of Dubuque's most famous landmarks, the Julian Dubuque Monument, which sits atop a limestone bluff and serves as the resting place for the founder of Dubuque, who established a relationship with the original inhabitants of the island, the Meskwaki. Since 2016, nearly 40 murals have popped up in Dubuque, all a collaboration between a nonprofit organization and the local art community, who have reached out to world-renowned artists to help make the Dubuque cultural landscape something unique. Explore downtown and take photos in front of your favorite vibrant murals. Get a map of all the artwork and learn more at Travel Dubuque's website at www.traveldubuque.com. Lake Rathbun. If you're looking to stay at a resort but nervous about COVID-19, take a look at Honey Creek Resort on Lake Rathbun in southern Iowa. The resort, which includes a lodge with 105 rooms, 28 cottages, and an RV park, has taken extra precautions to ensure the safety of its guests, including requiring face masks in all indoor and public spaces, and additional social distancing guidelines in the indoor water park and restaurant. During your stay, enjoy the outdoor aqua park, rent kayaks or other watercraft, go fishing, or play a round of golf at the preserve. Take a short drive to Centerville or Albia for a little shopping. Lula's Bakery and Coffee Shop in Centerville is a favorite, baking cookies and cupcakes from scratch. They even offer gluten-free cupcakes. Look for the hot pink building on the southwest side of the historical Centerville Square. In Albia, walk the square 4 stops at Inspire You All Things Good, Benton Avenue Boutique, and Mustard Seed Company Gift Shop. And finally, Sioux City. Experience the Luss Hills near Sioux City. The Dorothy Picot Nature Center in the scenic Stone State Park is now open, with a limit of 30 visitors at a time and the requirement of staying 6 feet apart. The length of a white-tailed deer, apparently. The unique indoor and outdoor exhibits offer educational opportunities for kids and adults, including interactive prairie, wetland, and woodland exhibits. Luss Hills Natural History exhibits, a bird viewing area, outdoor children's playscape, trails, and scenic viewpoints, and more. Located on Sioux City's riverfront, the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center and Betty Strong Encounter Center feature exhibits showcasing the core of Discovery's time in the area, with the death and burial of Sergeant Charles Floyd at the center of the story. Floyd was the first U.S. soldier to die west of the Mississippi River. Watch presentations on explorations and native cultures, and don't miss the 14-foot-tall bronze Spirit of Discovery sculpture depicting Lewis, Clark, and Lewis's dog, Seaman. Find out more at SiouxCityICIC.com. Let the kids blow off some steam in a safe and educational environment at the Launchpad Children's Museum. Exhibits include building and engineering activities, a flight zone, and the museum's signature exhibit, the water table, signifying the importance of rivers to the Siouxland area and allowing visitors to discover and experiment. To ensure the safety of all visitors, the Launchpad is asking patrons to reserve a time slot, with only 50 visitors being allowed at one time. Masks are encouraged and the temperature of visitors will be taken by staff before entering. Museum staff will also be establishing strict cleaning and disinfecting procedures. Executive Director Ruleen Gartner said, "As always, the health and safety of our guests and children is our number one priority. We will continue to strive to create the best atmosphere for play and discovery. We don't want to change things for the kids too much, so the Launchpad will do our best to make these adjustments without altering their ability to learn and play." And finally, you can learn more at launchpadmuseum.com. Okay, it looks like I have time, so I will return to read some more about the state tournaments. DCG pitcher Logan Smith, nearly perfect in victory against Benton. This is written by Tommy Birch. After putting the finishing touches on a nearly flawless outing Tuesday night, Dallas Center Grimes pitcher Logan Smith iced down his arm and gave his performance an unusual critique. "I felt like I can be better," Smith said. It's hard to imagine that Smith could have been much better Tuesday night. The right-handed pitcher tossed a one-hitter and guided number 2 Dallas Center Grimes to a 1-0 victory over number 7 Benton Community in a Class 3A quarterfinal. I felt like that wasn't my best yet, Smith said. I think my best is yet to come. Smith was nearly perfect. The senior surrendered just one hit, a fifth-inning single by Drew Lang. He struck out 9 and went the distance for the Mustangs, who improved to 18-3 on the season and advanced to Friday's semifinals. Smith, who walked just 1, was the main reason, keeping Benton Community off balance all night with his fastball and assortment of off-speed stuff. That's kind of what we thought we'd get from talking to some people, said Benton Community coach Derek Anderson. He commands the zone, has 3 pitches, and was commanding them all day. It's nothing new for Smith, who entered the tournament as one of the most dominant pitchers in Class 3A. His 0.34 earned run average trailed only 2 other pitchers. Smith even added to his perfect record Tuesday, improving to 8-0. He credits his successful season to a strong off-season that included training with former big league pitcher Dan Jennings. I worked really hard in the off-season, Smith said. I worked as hard as I ever have before, and I expect a lot of myself, and I felt like I was deserving of this. It showed. Smith didn't need much help Tuesday. The only run of the game came in the 3rd inning when Caleb Dickin ripped an RBI single to right to give the Mustangs a 1-0 lead they would never relinquish. Smith took it from there, striking out 5 of the last 7 hitters he faced, including the side in the 6th. We always think we need 1 or 2 with Logan, Dickin said. That's all we need, basically. That's all Dallas center Grimes could muster together off Benton Community starter Cade Timmerman, who struck out 7 and allowed just 1 run on 3 hits in 6 innings of work. As shocking as it sounds, Dallas center Grimes coach Byron Payton said Smith could have been even better. Payton said Smith, who usually sits around 85 miles per hour with his fastball, was missing a little velocity Tuesday, but still cruised through the night. He's worked really hard, Payton said. He's made himself into what you saw today. He really has. It's been nice. These guys really depend on him. He's just been ultra reliable this year. Smith may have one more shot to show just how great he can be. Payton said he plans to use Smith, who threw just 76 pitches on Tuesday, again if the Mustangs reach the championship game. But the Mustangs have to survive the semifinals first. Even though Smith was happy with how things went on Tuesday, he said he's still got more he wants to accomplish on the hill at Principal Park. It felt great, and I just want to have the mindset that we're not done yet, and we still have 2 more to go, Smith said. And the final piece is on the softball tournament, written by Matthew Bain. Top-seeded Fort Dodge edges Ankeny Centennial in 5A semis. The home team has 1 more win to go. By beating Ankeny Centennial 5-3 in Wednesday's Class 5A state semifinals, top-seeded Fort Dodge will play for its first softball championship Thursday against number 2 Cedar Rapids Kennedy at the Rogers Sports Complex in Fort Dodge. These kids, they've been playing together literally since they were 5 and 6 years old. It's such a feeling. Nobody can describe it, Dodgers head coach Andy Adams said. Centennial, they played such a great game. Hats off to them and their coaches for getting them ready. I'm telling you right now, at this level, everybody's got to be ready for anyone. Fort Dodge got its 5 runs on 6 hits, including home runs from Tristan Doster and Martine Lowry. The Jaguars scored a run in the top of the 1st before Doster answered with her 2-run homer in the bottom half of the inning. Centennial pieced a couple hits together to tie the game at 2-2 in the 3rd. Fort Dodge then scored a run after loading the bases with 1 out in its half of the 3rd to go up 3-2. Centennial again tied it 3-3 in the 5th. Lowry then hit her solo shot in the bottom of the 5th to put the Dodgers up for good. We can do it, Lowry said. We're a family. That was Lowry's first home run of the season. The fans of Rogers Sports Complex were loud for their hometown team. It means so much to our community, Adam said. You guys don't know because we're not used to doing this all of the time. We really aren't. And our community takes such pride in these kids, in these families. And I'm not saying that no one else does, but for a lot of these bigger towns, they're used to this kind of stuff, and they win a lot. We don't. So this means a lot. We finally had the luck go our way, too. These kids have always worked hard. The teams that I've had in the past, they've always worked hard. But finally, we got some luck going our way, so it's pretty exciting. And to be at home, I hope everybody comes. I understand COVID, but everybody wear a mask or wrap a towel around your head and let's go. Jalen Adams pitched all 7 innings for Fort Dodge, allowing 3 runs, 2 of them earned, on 8 hits while striking out a pair. For Centennial, Maddie Heisman pitched 6 innings, allowing 5 earned runs on 6 hits and 7 walks while striking out 5. Taylor Runchy went 3-for-4 with an RBI. Franny Burnett went 2-for-4 with a couple runs scored. Sydney Morris and Anna Christensen knocked in Centennial's other 2 runs. Fort Dodge will play Kennedy at 5 p.m. Thursday in the 5A title game. It will be a battle of the tournament's top 2 seeds. Now it's just toe-to-toe, machine versus machine, Adam said. They've got a great team. We've got a great team. It's gonna be on. This is what 1 and 2 should be. I've got 1 minute left, so I'm gonna turn to the USA Today real quickly and read the Moneyline short article. Pending home sales up in June, highest since 2006. The number of Americans signing contracts to buy homes rose for the 2nd straight month after a devastating spring freeze brought on by the coronavirus outbreak. The National Association of Realtors said Wednesday that its index of pending sales rose 16.6% to 116.1 in June, its highest level since 2006. Contract signings were 6.3% ahead of where they were last year, after being significantly behind due to the pandemic. And GM's net income plunges in 2nd quarter. General Motors reported Wednesday its net income tumbled on slow sales and thin inventory in the 2nd quarter, especially of its profitable pickups and SUVs following an 8-week factory closure due to the coronavirus pandemic. GM announced a net loss of $800 million, down 132% from the same time a year ago. Its earnings before interest and taxes adjusted were a loss of $500 million, down 118%. Net revenue was down 53% to $16.8 billion. And that brings us to time for Dear Abby, the title of today's column, Presence of new partner causes added pain for X. And here is the letter. Dear Abby, my boyfriend of 2 years, Kevin, recently broke up with me. We've had problems in the past about me lying to him or withholding information. I lied because he had high expectations of me and I didn't want to be a disappointment. He is truly the first person I have loved unconditionally since the breakup with my child's father 5 years ago. Kevin and I are still friends, sometimes with benefits, but he has moved on to another woman. I'm heartbroken. When I visited him the other day, I realized that she has practically moved in. Kevin and I had talked about a life together, but I'm worried this new woman will get the life with the man I love that I had been longing for so long. What advice, if any, can you offer me? Signed, Left Behind in Alabama. Abby says, Dear Left Behind, I'm sorry to be the carrier of bad news, but it appears your ex-boyfriend is enjoying the benefits of being with 2 women, and you are getting your heart broken. It is time for you to move on, because a new chick has all but moved into the nest you shared with Kevin. One has to wonder if she is aware that he has a FWB, friend with benefits, in addition to her. I am betting the answer is no. And by the way, I have to wonder what kind of a man behaves the way you have described, because he is not treating you or this new woman honestly. In your next relationship, I hope you will realize that you are good enough just as you are, and there is no reason you must live up to anyone else's expectations. That was your mistake this time around. Well, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Des Moines Register for Thursday, July 30th, 2020. You can hear this show at 6 p.m. and again at 1 a.m. Recordings are available on our website, iowaradioreading.org. All material heard on IRIS is intended for the use of Iowans who are print disabled. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call at 515-243-6833. You can also call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa, 1-877-404-4747. Once again, we want you to know that our program schedule has changed so that we can get as much local information to as many listeners as possible. The Fort Dodge Messenger will be read at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. The Mason City Globe Gazette will be read at 8 a.m. Monday through Friday. Your Des Moines Register will continue to be read from 9 a.m. to noon each day. The Cedar Rapids Gazette will be read at noon, 7 days a week. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier will be read at 1 p.m., 7 days a week. The Dubuque Telegraph Herald will be read at 2 p.m., Monday through Friday. The Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil will be read at 3 p.m., Monday through Friday. The Sioux City Journal will be read at 4 p.m., 7 days a week. The Ames Tribune will be read at 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. And the Midweek Shopping Cart is read each Wednesday at 9 p.m. We will stay with this schedule until further notice. I'm your reader, Dale Finnegan. It has been a pleasure to read for you today. Stay tuned now for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. And thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.